Decisions, decisions, decisions. Do I rent or buy a home? Do I buy a truck or a sedan? Do I live here or do I live there? Do I go to the feast with my immediate family or do I go with other friends this year? What am I going to do 20 years from now if I am told that I have cancer? Do I help my kids this time around or do I say no? Am I just an enabler if I say yes? What doctor should I listen to? Do I go back to school or do I remain stuck in my job or get a second job or maybe start a second career? What church should I be with? When I'm on my own, should I go to church? A church? What if new people in my life do not want to be part of any religious system? Then what do I do? Shall I be the first person on my block to buy the Galaxy 45 Teflon 7 phone with its 5-year contract? Or do I wait 3 years to buy it for next to nothing on eBay? What do I do if my fiancé comes home drunk? Or what if he says, it'll be better next year? Caution, the Surgeon General has determined that answering these questions incorrectly could lead to great heartache and even death. Who's the Surgeon General? Well, God, in this analogy. There was a song that came out decades ago. The lyrics go like this. Did you ever have to make up your mind, pick up on one and leave the other behind? It's not often easy and it's not often kind. Did you ever have to make up your mind? Did you ever have to finally decide, say yes to one and let the other ride? There's so many changes and tears you may hide. Did you ever have to finally decide? Now, maybe I should have sung that for special music, but that might have thinned out the audience. The quality of your life and mine will be determined by the decisions that we make. If we look back in our history, I think, in our lives, we feel very good about some of our decisions, and then others we might have regretted. Sometimes we might think, well, we waited too long, or we paid too much, or I said the wrong thing. Well, some of us are making difficult decisions even this very week, and others may be next week that don't know that that will yet happen. Life is full of choices. Some are major. What I'd like to do in the time we have is to look at what the Bible has about making up your mind. What the Bible has to say about making decisions. We basically make a series of choices every day, and it's valuable to decide, draw conclusions, evaluate the quality of these decisions. As one person said, we make our decisions and then our decisions make us. So what are some of the things that we can do to be on safer ground, to be more successful, to be able to reap positive results for what we take the time to sow? Well, I have several points. And the first being, we need to pray and search for wisdom. I don't think that comes as a surprise to anybody. But, you know, it's easy to make a decision and not think about that. But to be successful in our activities, wouldn't we want God on our side? Wouldn't you want God to bless whatever time we take, the decision we make? And as I enumerated at the introduction, there are so many different things that we could think about, things that we can't afford to be wrong on, things that we would like to do well. I'd like for us to begin in James chapter 1, and look at the brother of Christ is James, what he was inspired to say. He did not mince words. He really cut to the marrow of the bone in so many cases. And even though there are 5 chapters of the book of James, it's really many, many concepts that are crammed together, compacted, and it can take a great deal of time to go through a book like that. But in James chapter 1, in verse 5, it says here, he asks, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that gives to all men liberally. That's something that Solomon was able to do. When God appeared to Solomon, remember, he said, you know, I can give you riches, I can give you fame, I can give you insight, whatever you ask for, you know, let me know and I will give it to you. And Solomon had the wisdom to ask for more wisdom. And it pleased God, and he made him extraordinarily wise. And some of his writings, of course, are canonized in the Bible. But it doesn't just have to be Solomon. All of us at any time can please God by saying, "Can you help me to see things that I might miss? Ask questions that I may not even ever consider when I buy my next car or my next home or marry someone or do something or whatever it is, or maybe befriend somebody that needs help that nobody else is making a connection with." You know, asking God for divine insight is a very, very powerful thing. God can do that. He can really help us and give us an extra measure of thinking where we might think, and I've seen this in counseling where somebody will say, "Well, have you, halfway through, have you considered this?" And then that person says to me, "I don't know what made me think of that, but it just came to my mind. And it was the right thing at the right time." God is very is timely. He's, as we already heard, always on time. And he can help us to have an on-time solution if we yield ourselves and ask for his help. So in James 5 and 1, verse 5, "If you, any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that gives to all men liberally." He's not chintzy about that. "And upbraids not, and it shall be given to him. Let him ask in faith, nothing wavering." Don't want to be equivocating. "Oh, Father, help me to have faith." And then the next week, "Oh, I forgot. I forgot to follow up on that." And then, you know, crisis hits. "Oh, help me to have faith." Sometimes people are frozen with indecision. Sometimes it just takes a lot less energy to say, "I'm going to make a decision and I'm going to move with it," rather than the fret. I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know. I could see it 20 ways. When Ronald Reagan was a child, he lived in Illinois and was at a, in that community. He was to buy or pick up some shoes, and he went down to the cobbler. And his parents wanted him, I guess, to buy custom shoes because the needs of his growing feet. So they asked him, "Do you want a square front, or do you want, you know, an apex, you know, which is pretty standard now?" And he thought about it. He was 6 or 7. He wasn't sure. "Well, you don't have to make your mind up now. We're not going to make these shoes for another couple days." But every day they'd ask him, and, well, he wasn't sure. Well, he wasn't sure. And after the last day they asked him, and he wasn't sure, then they decided, "Well, we know what we're going to do." And so when he came back to pick up his new shoes, they had one that had the apex toe front and the other was square. So he walked around with those for a while. He said it was one of the most valuable lessons he ever learned. And it paid dividends later, but it was because he was indecisive, caught between two opinions. A lot of times that can be us. That can be us. We don't need to have it that way. "Let him ask in faith, nothing wavering." And verse 7, "For let not a man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord if he's so inconsistent." Verse 8, "A double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways." That's an interesting word, double-minded. We know what logos is in Greek because logos was enough to reference to Christ. And di is sometimes from the Greek is means two. And the word double-minded is from the Greek word dialogos, which is simply another way of saying dialogos, meaning saying the same thing twice, or saying one thing to one person, one thing to another, or saying one thing to one person or to God and then not thinking about it or forgetting. And so one is double-minded. That doesn't get good results. That just idles us in neutral, and we're caught between two opinions. And so that's not good enough for us. In Greek, that word, dialogos, literally means two-souled. We know man is a soul, and here it says two-souled. Pulled apart in different directions, meaning divided loyalties, divided priorities. James makes up the word, but we've all felt that way. And it's like the state of not really being sure of what you want. But when we pray for wisdom, wisdom gives us insight to say, wake up and say, oh, I want to go that way. This is what's going to help me. And along with these the verses we've read, we could go back to Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 1, and you may have this memorized. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 7. And it talks about the fear of the eternal is the beginning of wisdom. And apparently, that is such an important concept that God wanted to get across to his people that he repeats it in Proverbs chapter 9 and verse 10. And he repeats it yet again in Psalm 111 in verse 10. That the fear of the eternal is the beginning of knowledge. It doesn't mean that we are to be just afraid of God, but that we hold him in great awe and great reverence and great honor. And when we do that, we see how great God is and his ways are and how perfect they are, and how if we can pattern our lives around his example, that we are more successful Christians, we have more self-control, and we're just more valuable to God and to those around us. And so who wouldn't want to have the fear of the eternal when you understand all the benefits involved? So the fear of the eternal is the beginning of wisdom. And when we consider what does it take to make right decisions time after time, well, first of all, we need to be praying and searching for wisdom. And we see what James has written and what Solomon, King Solomon, wrote on that subject. Another scripture that's valuable to look at here is in Psalm 119. Psalm 119 in verse 105. And it says, Psalm 119 verse 105, David writing, he says, "Your word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path." I don't know if you've ever been in the woods at night, but if you don't have a lantern, or if it goes out, you don't lack a flashlight, and it's pitch black, it's going to be very easy to stumble your way through. You probably would fall, and many of us have, I'm sure. And without God's direction, it's like being in a dark woods and not knowing one's way. But according to Psalms, according to David, he recognized that for him, God was that light and a lamp unto his path, his course of life. And for the most part, he welcomed God's presence in his life. And he too understood, because of what he wrote in Psalm 111, verse 10, the fear of the eternal is the beginning of wisdom. He understood how important it was to have godly wisdom to make right decisions. We've been going through part of in the Bible study recently in Samuel. It's amazing the wisdom that David exercised when he decided to come back to Jerusalem. Remember, Absalom tried to overthrow them and succeeded for a short time. And David was on the run. He went, and he was elderly at this point. He couldn't travel well. And being feeble, in his case, he was somehow able to get across the Jordan River away from Jerusalem. And here Absalom had a huge army and was growing. They had him on the run, and they were ready to just destroy him. And he finally got the upper hand. God's hand was in it, blessed him by thwarting the rebellion. But when he came back, he could have done what many other people would have said. They tried to overthrow me, and heads are going to roll. We're going to get revenge. We're going to make an example of these people. We're going to go after the rebels. They're going to be sorry they ever did this. He could have done it like that. And that's typically what happens in man's history. But instead, he thought it over and decided, no, I'm going to show restraint. I'm going to wait until many of these people have remorse and invite me back. I see a way that I can regain the kingdom, march into Jerusalem, and not shed one drop of blood. To be able to revive the entire kingdom so there's no collateral damage, there's no damage of infrastructure, that we can pick up where we left off, and that's what happened. It takes a person that has the wisdom and the character, maybe to say the opposite of what he would feel, to overlook certain flaws and to be able to say, there's got to be an ideal way to handle this. I am going to ask for God's help. I don't think, there's no verse that says that he prayed specifically for that, but knowing how he was, knowing that he didn't want to be stumbling in the dark or shooting from the hip or damaging his country even with more grief than it already had endured, it stands to reason that he would have consulted his Creator because he did on so many important issues. So he wanted to make the right decisions, and he had the insight to do it. And God blessed him. And that's what happens. And that's why it's so amazing in Psalm 119 and verse 1. Let's see. 97. Yes. How I love I thy law. This is Psalm 119, verse 97. It's my meditation all the day. And you through your commandments have made me wiser than my enemies, and they are ever with me. I have more understanding than all my teachers. Now, years ago, before I understood the Bible, I would have thought, oh, those are nice, warm, fuzzy thoughts. That's to make that. Those are feel-good statements. That isn't nice, you know. I'm more wise than all of my enemies, and it's my meditation all the days of my life. No, literally, that was the case. Literally, he was smarter than the people that opposed him. He had more wisdom. He went to God. He had a relationship. He asked for wisdom frequently. He had the fear of God, and an awesome respect for God, and God responded. And we don't have to aspire to have more wisdom than other people necessarily, but the wisdom to be able to hit the bullseye, to bat 1,000, to make the right decisions all the time, to look before we leap and be careful. These are things that lead to good decision-making, and good decision-making is no accident. Unless we're just born with wisdom, the indication of the Bible is that it's something to be acquired and looked at, studied. You analyze human nature, analyze ourselves. When we fast, and we can take inventory of ourselves. We look at the world around us and learn from the same things we see. More about that later. But that was the first point that I wanted to stress, was that we want to see what the Bible has to say about making up our minds, what the Bible has to say about good decision-making. A second area is to count the cost of everything that we think we're going to do. Well, if I buy this yellow truck or this other car, or if I make this other investment in my home or remodel it or whatever, is that what I should do? Does it make sense? Is the time right? Should I take, should I take this stressful job? If I do, the money is fantastic. It's really, really good. I can take this job and I can retire at age 45. I think this is a go. But it happens to be very, very stressful. In fact, when I think about it, it's so stressful, I am sure it's going to take 25 years off my life. So what do? Count the cost. Maybe I'd like to be like the Roman candle, go out in a flame of glory and die at age 45. Or maybe other things are more important. You weigh the cost. Is it worth it? You count the cost. Let's take another example to paraphrase what we know from Ecclesiastes 3. There's a time to be born, a time to die, a time to reap, a time to sow, a time to have a car, and a time not to have a car. You realize, well, a number of you would know this, the more you pay for a car, as a rule, the less expensive car maintenance is down the road. The less you pay for a vehicle, if you get it at fair market value, the many more car repair costs you will have. To say, hey, I needed a car and I got one for just $100. Of course, the tires are bald, needs a new muffler, maybe new transmission, gears are slipping, needs a radiator, wheel alignment, repair, new fuel injectors, it's running a little rough, new power steering, brakes, rotors, drums, but I've got wheels. That $100 car probably cost $5,000. Do I have $5,000 for a $100 car, plus tax and title? Well, I could get cheap insurance with a $20,000 deductible. That means if I crash into a Porsche that's brand new, I'm liable to pay the $20,000, then everything above that, you know, is covered by my insurance. Well, the tires are bald. Maybe that's $400. New muffler, $200. New transmission, $2,500. New battery, $90. Fuel injectors, $200. That's a guess. Brakes, rotors, drums. Could that be $500? Anyway, if it's not $5,000, it's going to be multi-thousand dollars. And maybe that's the right thing to do. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's something to talk over with a car mechanic. We have people that, at young ages, save money and bought as they could afford. The timing was right. Now, something that a number of people in here have done, admirable, they paid cash to negotiate for a lower price. I don't know if everybody in this room, as we find our way through life, realize that cash is king. Cash will buy at lower prices. You're in a strong position to negotiate. We were talking to some people recently. They bought a house that was on the market for $110,000. And there were 7 contracts on the table that said, we want this house. And these people didn't have $110,000, but they had cash. And so they said, we'll pay $93,000. And they got the deal. They saved $17,000 just because they had the money saved up from other liquidation sales. And so they were able to move in, walk right in. That's $17,000. It'll take, I don't know, maybe you can earn that in a day, but most people here, I would gather, would take some time. And maybe for some it might take a year, maybe longer, part-time work. Imagine, you save yourself a year or 2 years in some cases, or maybe half a year, whatever it is, months, time is money. You save yourself a chunk of time. It's like you've gained time. You don't have to work an extra period of time in order to have that money. And that's the money after taxes. So, the point being that if you're in a position of strength, you can negotiate more successfully. And I do remember it was a coin. It was said 1837 that was in our family, and it said underneath, time is money. And to me, I always have a clock going. It's always the two-minute drill, you know, moving across the football field, because there's just so much to do, so many things to do, places to go, people to see. I can't afford to not know what time it is. That's life. But if you use the time well, or you double up, or you combine things, or whatever, you're saving time. You're saving your life. You're redeeming the time, as it says in Ephesians. So that's, to me, that's a huge inducement to being careful, to you looking for time-saving, cost-cutting measures. And back to the car analogy or situation, you know what you're getting into, whatever price you pay for a vehicle. You know what you're getting into because you know what things really cost, or you get with people that know what they cost and can tell you the straight story. That's wisdom. That's leaping before you, or looking before you leap. There is that proverb that he that jumps to conclusions seldom has happy landings. I met this guy the other day. I just know we're in love. He knows all about world news because he always watches the news because he's always on the couch watching TV all day. He says he loves me. He doesn't have any money, but I know it's going to work out. And, you know, you can jump to conclusions like that, not wanting to put anybody down, but you just, wisdom, decisions help so much. There are inexpensive and more expensive ways to arrive at the right decision. There are people who have told me, how is it, why do I have to pay for decade after decade for something I did long ago? It's easy to put the cart before the horse. And life can go on. But there are some bad choices it will bring heartache. It will make it more difficult. And everything will be more expensive. So it's so important to count the cost. Look before we leap. Be sure. Double check. Say, you went through something that I'm going through. How did you do it? How did it work out? Not the time to be impulsive. In my business days, I remember talking to one person who said to me, and she had this new business. She says, you know, when I just have an insight or just an inclination to do something, I just do it just like that. I make a snap decision on it. That's dangerous. And a few months later, she was out of business. Easy to put the apples in the wrong cart, to make decisions that are not as good. There's another, I know of several people that have come to me and said, well, I just quit my job. I quit my job. Why did you do that? Well, the boss told me a lie or told somebody else a lie, and add insult to injury, he took God's name in vain. Well, he shouldn't have done that. So I quit. So what are you doing now? Nothing. And I've got bills to pay. Well, did you not think that out before you got impulsive and quit? No, I didn't. But I was wondering if you could loan me some money that I hope you won't care about so that I don't have to pay you back right away. I've been down this road with... I think most people are conscientious. But I think that we all know people, and we've all seen these type of things happen. As a sidebar, never loan money to anybody unless you're prepared to kiss it goodbye. And sometimes we're not in that position, so we have to use wisdom, making the right decisions. And if we do loan it, or if we get into a contractual arrangement with people, get it in writing. Get it in writing. Get it in writing. And did I say get it in writing? Yes. I've seen in situations where people are frustrated with each other. Well, I said, yeah, you said, but no, I didn't do that. Well, you did this, you meant that? Well, yeah. Or I want to start up an ideal business and I'm going to hire only God-fearing people. Now, I as a boss could get upset. Those God-fearing people are not showing up on time. So I'll go ask. Well, the reason I didn't come on time was that I knew you were God-fearing and you would know that I needed extra time to pray before I got here. And the boss is thinking, well, these people are God-fearing. Everybody else is coming at 8 o'clock sharp. I know these guys will come at 7:30 because they're in the church or they're religious. Well, is it in writing? If not, may not count for anything. So whether it's that or something else or some deal, especially where serious money is involved, purchase of a home or whatever, get it in writing. Or insurance. I remember talking to a car agent's secretary, and I said, well, I need to come in and sign the policy so that I'm insured. She says, oh, you're covered. You're covered. And I called another friend of mine, an agent. I said, how's that possible? He says, you better get there and write, sign the form, get yourself documented officially. So I did. In fact, I shouldn't have even had to ask that friend. It's pretty obvious that you just don't take chances like that. So you look, foresee the evil thereof. And that's one of the Proverbs. I forget which one.
But you look ahead. In Proverbs chapter 15, verse 28, I talked about the situation where a person just in a huff quits his job, just impulsively decides to do that because he doesn't like what's going on. And I've definitely met people like that. Chapter 15, verse 18 of Proverbs, a wrathful man stirs up strife, but he that is slow to anger appeases strife. It is so always better to appease anger or to be slow to anger. And too many of us have violated that principle. But if we're going to be successful managers, if we're going to get along with our family and others that come into our lives, we're not going to want to speak before we hear a matter or just get all emotional about something that may not even exist, that could be misread. So when we read through the Proverbs and all, we can find that it can be very humbling because we'll see ourselves in some of these. But wanting to have wisdom to make the right decisions is something that we can't afford not to do. Not to do. So when I mentioned about cars and the cost of cars, I know most of my life I've had a car. But you know, there were some years early in my life when it made no sense. There are some people in other parts of the world that don't have any option besides municipal transportation. But one of the nice things is when the bus or the metro system breaks down, the people don't have to pay any more for it. Just their 85 cents for their token or whatever it is that they have. Okay, so let's move on to this third point. I've already talked about the need to pray and search for wisdom, and then we've looked at counting the cost. Third is learning from OPE. OPE, other people's examples. Other people's examples. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 1. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 1. Here we read, and for the next 11 verses, Christ speaking or through Paul. Moreover, brethren, I would have that you not be ignorant of how all of our fathers, that's the Israelites when they came out of Egypt, were under a cloud and all passed through the Red Sea. And they were all baptized in symbolically in the sense that they crossed the sea and they were surrounded by water. They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea and did eat of the same spiritual meat and drank of the same spiritual rock. For they drank of the rock that followed them. That rock was Christ. And many of them God was not well pleased with, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now they argued over it with Moses. They wanted in some cases to return to Egypt. They had the revolt of Korah. They grumbled over water. God, Moses has brought us out in this desert. He wants us to die of thirst. And God intervened several times. And the whole history is in the Old Testament, but this is a summation of that. And then they were unhappy with the lack of enough meat, they thought. So they cried out for quail, and when God gave them the quail, they ate it raw. They were in a frenzy over it. And then they worshipped a self-made golden calf. And so all of this is referred to in the next few verses. And so it says, Christ speaking by verse 10, don't do all these different things, or murmur, or all the other problems that they committed. Don't imitate that. Verse 11, now these things happened unto them and for examples, that they were written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come. Paul, when he wrote, thought at that point, well, the end of the time is now nigh, and Christ is soon coming. He was off on the time frame. But here we are ever closer to Christ's return, and the Bible is recorded, this segment for us, that the references to all those different bad events that happen, they're recorded for our example so that we don't repeat that. The beauty of biblical history being made available is that we understand it and we think, oh, we can improve on that. We can avoid the grief that they incurred by making right decisions and reaping blessings instead. Because when you invest in God and He's part of your understanding, you reap wonderful results for the good deeds that you're sowing to try to have a relationship with God. So other people's experiences are very vital. And we can learn from history other people's examples. We can learn from our own successes and mistakes. And the beautiful thing about the mistakes is they're not fatal. We're still alive. We can do well. We can learn about people in the Bible that were not perfect, but they made good decisions most of the time. Abraham, Joseph, David, Gideon, Paul, Peter, John, Christ himself, who is flawless. And there were people recorded in the Bible that made bad decisions. Simon Magus, Jezebel, Cain, Judas Iscariot, Pilate, Hymenaeus, Nebuchadnezzar. And some of them changed. But these are valuable. We need to take advantage. If these things have already happened, we need to capitalize on these things. So learning from other people is good. The more we learn from other people, the less we learn have to learn from our own mistakes. But no mistake is fatal. If we are breathing and we're here, we have the opportunity to be in tune and in sync with God and be ultimately blessed to have eternal life. And that's another subject, but it's, you know, our future is in front of us if we are committed to being proactive. All right, a fourth area is making our decisions before the time of decision has to be made. Making one's decision before the time of decision has to be made. It's good to say, what if? What if such and such happens? Well, if such and such happens, I'll do this and that and this. People at Cape Kennedy would have to think when they were launching the space shuttle, all right, we have millions of dollars tied up and human lives at stake here. We want to be absolutely sure, especially after the shuttle disaster in January of 1986. And so for years before and for years after, they've had elaborate, detailed, sequential operations that they would go through. Okay, they practice this. All right. This is a practice test. They'd be at their computers and so forth. T-minus 10, 11 seconds, 10, 9. Okay, and then they simulate some disaster. O-rings are on fire. What do? We shut down the launch pad. We turn this thing off. Turn that. We do it in this particular sequence. Doom, boom. It's got to be within 10 seconds. And then avert a potential catastrophe, or if not a catastrophe, loss of expensive fuel, so that it wouldn't be set back for months on end. All of these different factors, they'd have to rehearse. What happens if this goes wrong and that goes wrong? What if? What if this? What if that? We had a deacon once back in New Hampshire that the pastor really appreciated, this particular person, and wasn't an erudite scholar or anything like that, but he was always doing the asking the what if. If we have Passover, what if there's somebody forgets to bring this or that? So it was redundant preparation, but he would have extra box of monstros or extra equipment, another microphone, whatever it was, constantly doing that. And there were a few times where there were a couple hiccups and they were able to go with plan B and C. And that's just part of life. It's naive to think, I'm going to plan to do this and it's going to be perfect. Or according to MapQuest, it says to get from here to Atlanta, it's going to be 8 hours, 32 minutes, and 17 seconds. And so I'm going to leave 8 hours, 32 minutes, 17 seconds before I have to get to the wedding or whatever this event is. Because you know that things happen. There has to be built-in contingency. And so sometimes that requires that we know ahead of time, if this happens, I do this. If that happens, I do the other. And Proverbs 22 and verse 3 is a reiteration of that principle. Proverbs 22 and verse 3. A prudent man, that could be anybody, man or woman, a prudent woman foresees the evil or the difficulties or the unexpected. And it says hides himself, herself. Well, if you go to a, say, Sansino Concordance or commentary or any book that analyzes the Hebrew words here, it indicates the phrase hides himself simply means to keep clear of. A prudent person foresees the evil and keeps clear of it, the problems. But the simple, and in the Hebrew it means thoughtless, not malicious, just not thinking. The simple pass on and are punished. Punished simply means reaping the penalty in this case. Passing on means walking blindly and down the street, basically, into danger zones and not understanding. If we're in Proverbs, we could go to chapter 7. Chapter 7, we read about the wayward woman here and this naive young man that is in her neighborhood. And it says in chapter 7, verse 7, I beheld one of the simple ones. He might have had an IQ of 200, but simple in that was not thinking. Simple ones, I discerned among the youth a man void of understanding, at least of practical street smart wisdom that, you know, you understand that nothing good, as Tony Dungy would say, famous football coach, nothing good happens outside after 12 midnight. Nothing good on the streets. He would always hammer that home to his players. Well, here, this person is out late and it's dark, and he's drifting into a very dangerous neighborhood where he's accosted and seduced, and he doesn't anticipate this. There's zero caution. Now, sometimes people can play games with themselves. This one man, for example, I don't know if it was in jest, but he said, well, I was a severe diabetic, and I have frequent sugar-induced blackouts, and I wanted to know if I should go into Dunkin' Donuts or not and get a fix, sugar fix. And I was just driving past Dunkin' Donuts and asked God for a sign. A lot of people would rather ask for a sign rather than take the time to weigh the facts. I asked God for a sign, and the sign would be this. If there was a parking place in front of the Dunkin' Donuts shop, then I knew it was for me. It just opened up, and I would drive right in. And that would be the sign from heaven. So was there a sign? Yes, there was. I was amazed. On my 10th time around the block, a parking place just opened right up. I guess that was God's will, right? That's blasphemy. That wasn't God's will. That was my will, you know, going around and around and around. People can play games with themselves, but it doesn't fool God. So I think we know that none of us would ever do that. But it drives home a point that sometimes people can just drop the ball and be lazy and say, well, let God do it, or let somebody else do it. Or if I could just get married, I could let my wife or my husband do all the decision-making. I could live a free life. No, it doesn't work that way. But there are different pitfalls that we can avoid. There are some situations or some people you can see a mile away and you just the body language suggests this does not look good. Sometimes I can get honked at and on the highway, and it's just better to hide myself. Just remember one time when I didn't do anything wrong, and somebody, I think, mistook me for somebody else. It was on Bush Boulevard. And we came to a traffic light. He was in front of me. He jumped out of his truck, and he was angry, and he pointed his finger at me. And I'm just glad he wasn't armed, and he was not in his right mind, or so it looked. And the best thing is a soft answer turns away wrath or to not say anything. There's a time maybe to speak out. And there's a time when it's better to hide oneself. Maybe not say anything. Life and death, it says in Proverbs, are in the power of, you know, power of life and death is in the tongue. Not good to say things that could incite or escalate violence. So it's all so important. But making our decisions before the time of decision has to be made. Know what we're going to do before the trouble occurs. Maybe you anticipate, you know, I'm managing these couple of crews on this big construction project, and they're not getting along, and I'm going to have to go in and make some decisions and maybe let some people go or do this or do that. And how it's handled is as important as what is handled. And you need wisdom. You need to think it through. And get some input maybe. Talk to somebody else who went through that. And some people that are argumentative can't be appeased. And you have to know that going in. Anyway, let's move on to another aspect of making decisions before the time of decision has to be made. Proverbs 24 and verse 27. Proverbs 24 and verse 27. Here it says, prepare your work without, make it fit for yourself in the field. Afterwards, build your house. I've seen this up in New England from centuries ago. You can see in different museums how people, if they would build a farm, they would build a foundation called a cellar hole, and they would put a frame of a house over it, and then the roof after. Well, you think that's logical. And the reason why that's recorded is that for ourselves, that when we consider building families, we prepare our work without, and ideally, it's not always done this way, ideally we have our vocation first, then we get the property or rent the property, and then we get married, and then we have a family. It's, you can do it in the opposite order. You can get the family first, scramble to get a job, and then finally have a place to live. That's expensive. That is traumatic. That is emotionally distraught. Sometimes setbacks occur, and people have no choice but to scramble and do what they will. But a deep and abiding faith in God, who promises Matthew 6, food and clothing and shelter for those needs. And you go to God and you say, look, not that I deserve it, but in the name of Jesus Christ, you're using the power of attorney. You say, quote the scripture, Matthew 7, Luke 11, 9-13. Hey, you promised. This is what it is. You're not going to give me King Solomon's kingdom, but I need this and I need that and I need to hear help. And if you're in a crunch, and we've all been there at different times when we ask for God to help and we do what we have to do, and you've got faith and works together and we get through it. But as a rule, what we implore to our youth and to all is that when it's in our power to do so, that we get established with our careers first, get our background cautiously and wisely, choose a mate that will accommodate or fit our personalities, better to match than to patch, and not jump to conclusions. And, you know, hope deferred makes the heart sick, another Proverbs 15:22. But when it comes, it is the breath of life. That's not 15:22, I can't think of it. But 15:22 is good, of Proverbs. Without counsel, purposes are disappointed, but in a multitude of counselors, they are established. Getting input, talking to other people. Well, how did you do it? What went well? What didn't go well? It makes life secure. And then when the time comes, not only is the time right, there is just pure bliss, pure joy, pure happiness, no fear, no worries. That's the way life is supposed to be. That's the way God wants it for all of us. And when it's in the right order, it's much less expensive, much happier. And so the best way to be able to succeed in that is to decide before it happens, before one is in a relationship. It's just so much better. I can remember, again, a man that ran a huge maintenance cleaning business in Tampa. He says, I don't like to think about it, but I wonder, well, what would happen if we lost our biggest account? It was like a string of 35 bank buildings. He says, well, if we do that, if that happens, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to change, so forth. Seeing the evil thereof, or the, and then knowing what to do. Let's move on here. A fifth area, anticipate. Anticipate situations that would require that we make good decisions. That's really akin to the previous point of having the decision made ahead of time. That's, take the example, I won't take the time to turn there, but in Genesis, we are familiar with Joseph, who resisted Potiphar's wife and was thrown in jail. Now, some people might have succumbed, maybe be caught up in the moment, but it was almost like he knew ahead of time, hey, if this happens, I'm not going in the wrong direction. Very possibly, some of his co-workers might have said, you better watch out for Potiphar's wife. You know, she's this way and that way. And he, it may not have been a surprise to him. Maybe it was. But it's very possible that she had done these things before and was not trustworthy. And so there's a real chance that he might have said, well, if the worst happens, I know what I'm going to do. That's so helpful to know in advance, I'm going to do this, going to do that. And you can't be indecisive in those cases. Not in the heat of the moment. You know, in sports, sporting contest, if people are indecisive, well, do I go with the situation or do I not? Spectators don't tolerate that in the arena of sports, yet they will do that themselves in their own lives. Can you imagine a football game where one of the players is out there and the game is going on and he's just not sure where he's supposed to be? And, well, do I chase that guy or do I go over here? Or, maybe I stay in the same place. Might check the shoes he's wearing. Maybe one is pointed and the other is squared off. You know, a statement that sometimes is made is, if I had only known. Oh, if I had only had, or if my wife or my husband had only left a will, then we know how to what to do with this property. That's a huge one. Or if I had have only known, I wouldn't have hung out with the wrong crowd. It's tough when I'm in some of these prisons. Talk to one guy. I was 19, he said. All I wanted was a Hershey candy bar. And I went into the convenience store. Yeah, I had a gun with me. But I wasn't pointing at anybody. I wasn't going to hurt anybody. I've never hurt anybody. I've never hurt a flea. He's got 20 years in there. Yeah, dumb. Could learn from other people. And now he's turning his life around. But it's you see these things. My people, it says in Hosea 4, verse 6, destroyed for lack of knowledge. The tragedy was the knowledge was right there through God's instruction and the scrolls of His Word. I've sat in homes where somebody dies and the surviving mate is emotionally distraught. That's understandable, but has no clue. We've never talked about burial. I don't know whether this person wants to be cremated or buried, or I don't know what things cost, and I never thought about it. We never talked about it, and we you know, no. If this thing happens, then we're going to do that. If that happens, we go here. We do this clearance. We turn this switch off. We do this. Another huge question, and you don't want to ask this right away, but you've got to ask. You know. Do you have a deed for the house? Is it joint tenants' right to survivor, or is it tenants in common? Is this thing going to go through probate, and the government's going to take a third of it, and the kids that were supposed to be inheriting anything don't get a thing out of it because it's not thought through? Well, we never do that. And we've had that happen in our congregation. Having a will is an example of making the decisions before the time. A final point as I hurry to the conclusion. Number 6, prove and believe that God's way works. God's way works. Sometimes people don't know. They've been brought up in the church. Well, this is my parents' church. Well, is it going to be my church? Well, I haven't decided yet. Maybe. prove all things now. Prove and believe that God's way works, and it does work. We stress this at the camps. We have a lot of different sporting activities and many other different social activities. There's two dances. There's enough to keep the youth going and going and going and going. But we take an hour a day to do Bible study and 15 minutes at the end, maybe at night, to reflect on the day and what spiritual lessons can be connected to some of these experiences. And in many different ways, show that God's way works on the softball field or in basketball, with teamwork and with building relationships and friends in every which way you can imagine. I can remember one time, I dated many people, that was what we were supposed to do at Ambassador College, and one person stunned me. And there was a certain amount of wind of doctrine and dispute going on this one belief. And she had worked with the literature and was able actually to proofread many, many booklets. And I teased her and said, "Boy, that must be wonderful, being able to be getting paid to do something you would do anyway." And then we were talking about one doctrinal controversy that had flared up, and she just sighed and said, "Oh, I don't know what I believe." I thought, what? How can you? I mean, that's like being swimming across a raging river and saying, "I don't know if it's worth having a paddle here or not. I don't know if it's worth asking for help or waving a flag or look for a ship or not to help get me across." You know, in a time of danger or time of doctrinal challenge, are you willing to be in a foxhole when the bullets are flying with somebody that's not sure what they believe in? In the future, it's going to be more challenging. That's not a time to be unsure of what one believes. Or, "I don't even know if God exists. I'm not sure He's in my life because I've never taken the time to try to bring Him into my life." That's silly. That doesn't make sense. Prove and believe that God's way works. You know, shall I follow God or Baal? That was an interesting thing over in 1 Kings. Don't turn there. But in chapter 18, Elijah was on Mount Carmel, and he challenged the prophets of Baal and all of Israel. He says, "If God be God, follow Him. If Baal be Baal, and God, you follow Baal." And what did the Israelites do? They answered him not a word. They wouldn't commit themselves. That's because they didn't know enough about God that they could make the right decision. They were overwhelmed with Baal worship and all kinds of pagan activity, including child sacrifice. It was a terrible time in the history of Israel, and Elijah was bold enough to risk his life to get up there in front of everybody and say, "If God be God, follow God." And nobody did. Then when he called fire down from heaven, God is the real God. Shouldn't get to that point. It shouldn't get to the point where we're lying in a hospital somewhere thinking, "Am I going to die? I wonder," like W.C. Field, "I wonder if it's not time to look at the Bible." They couldn't believe it. W.C. Field's reading a Bible? He says, "Well, I'm just looking for loopholes. You know, don't get excited or anything." But it's deeper than that. So in summary, we should pray and search for wisdom. Secondly, we should count the cost. Thirdly, we should and can learn from other people's examples. Life should not... I mean, we have our challenges, we have our trials. But there are some trials that we should never, ever have to experience. We can see from others. I can think of, and it's never too late to change. In Korah's revolt, there were a number of people that were on Korah's side. But there were a couple at the end that decided, "Hey, I'm getting off this freight train that's going straight down off a cliff." And a couple people got off that train. But to learning from other people's examples is three. The fourth, making our decisions before the time that the decisions are required to be made. Fifth, anticipating situations that will require that we make good decisions. We all have situations that we can anticipate. And lastly, prove and believe that God's way works. It certainly does. We've seen some answers to prayer for as we covered in the announcements today. So do I rent or do I buy? What do I do 20 years or 30 years from now? Who shall I marry? These are huge questions. What should my relationship be with God? The most important question one can ask. These things can be addressed by having these different principles applied so that we hit the bullseye every time, that our decision-making is correct, that it leads to maximum happiness, which is what we all want, and great results, a win-win for everybody. Let's be thankful that decisions are something that we can be good at, something that God can help us with. Blessings by consulting the principles that are in God's rich blessing, the Bible. So let's strive to make the right decisions to enable us to be as successful as we possibly can.